Welcome to Deadhouse. I'm Dylan.
And I am sorry for the sound of my voice this week. Couldn't have cut out the worst time. I'm recovering from a sickness, influenza or something.
Yeah.
So I apologize, but if anything, I guess, enjoy the ASMR.
You are ill in the bad way. Man, we haven't seen each other for like 10 days. This could be the longest we've gone since I went to like New Zealand a year ago.
It's been a hot minute. Yeah. I mean, partly due to being sick. So we've had to delay our recording, which does not leave you much time to edit it.
Good
thing we moved back the release date previously.
Yeah.
And yeah, you went down to Sydney for work.
I went to Sydney. Yeah, I flew down Monday, came back Wednesday evening. And it was all expenses paid by my work. So
that's always nice.
I can't complain. I sat on here before, stayed in a 4-star hotel. Breakfast was included. And then we just got spoken to by a bunch of brands about new products coming out. Got some free shit, a bunch of branded water bottles, a lot of free coffee.
What'd you end up doing on your like time off? Because you said everyone was going to like Luna Park, but you had no interest in that.
Everyone went to Luna Park. Yeah, on the, I think, Tuesday night. So I went and got Thai food and came back to my hotel apartment and watched Stir of Echoes on Netflix.
Look at you living your life up in your 20s.
Yeah, not much different if I was up here, I guess. What about you? You and Alex went camping.
Yeah, we went up to Double Island.
Very good.
We had the Friday off, and it was at least half a good camping trip. We got up there, and it was beautiful weather.
Yep.
Had a lovely evening, lovely night. And then, like, midday Saturday, it started raining. And then it was kind of on and off raining for the rest of the weekend. And
that's grim.
We ended up packing up in the rain.
Oh.
And then on the drive home is when I started to really feel sick.
Mm.
And so we got home, just put everything under the house to, like, sort of air out.
Yeah, fair.
And then
I see the tent out there.
Yeah. And then immediately just went back to work, and I had to do like 2 10-hour shifts. And then luckily yesterday I could go home a little bit early and recover a bit more.
Yeah, that's rough, my friend. So do you reckon maybe you got sick from like just being out in the elements?
That's what my first thought was. Like, our mattress did get a little damp from the rain coming into the tent, like a rooftop tent.
Yeah, yeah.
But apparently that's an old wives' tale that, like, going outside with wet hair or, you know, spending time in the wet cold will make you sick. Apparently,
I don't think so. I think it's
other than hypothermia or like trench foot, then which is the thing that they used to get in the military in like World War I and II and shit.
Yeah.
Apart from those, you can't just get sick from being like cold and damp.
Yeah. Okay.
There's like influenza and shit going around at work. So I think I've just got that.
Mm, no good. Well, I'll tell you what, I'll try and carry this episode today and leave as little room for comment as possible.
And what is today's episode about?
Well, today we are discussing The Cabin in the Woods, 2011. Now, this is a film that I've only seen once before this recording. Oh, sorry. Once before I watched it again for this pod. And the first time I'd watched it was part of like an all-nighter. So I don't know if I was paying a heap of attention. So I had, you know, my reservations about this film, but you very much enjoy it.
I feel like I need to go back and rewatch some of the movies we watched at those all-nighters because that's the worst place to watch a movie, like, seriously.
Yeah, anything like that's got something to say.
That was the first time I watched Blair Witch and I didn't like it. Rewatch that, it was great. That was the first time I watched, I haven't gone back and rewatched it, but I think it's like a movie you like, Coherence.
Coherence, yeah, great film.
Yeah, I struggled with that. And I think there was one more, but I can't remember what it was.
I've got that on DVD. I should just lend it to you.
Okay. Yeah, I'll take it.
But yeah.
But yeah, we just got to go back and rewatch all of them.
I mean, admittedly, like, those kind of horror movies are good for all-nighters because it's just, like, fun. But when it's something like this that kind of subverts your expectations, it's easy to miss, like, the little things along the way.
Sure.
And I guess that's what I suffered from. But yeah, look, on rewatching, I don't think it's great. But, you know, we'll go into that. I think it's different enough.
I was going to say that it's the type of movie that you need to go in completely blind to enjoy. But I kind of don't believe that because I was also late to the party, like, watching the movie. I didn't watch it in 2011. I don't know when the fuck I watched it. But I knew the sort of premise or the twist before going into it. And I still really enjoyed it.
Yep.
So it's not like you need to, but I've just heard, like, read all the people's stories about the first time going into the movies and watching it. Like, that would have been wild. Like, going into the movies knowing nothing about this.
I mean, the fact that it's called The Cabin in the Woods, like, definitely you'd be going into it knowing that, like, a movie wouldn't just call itself The Cabin in the Woods if it wanted to be, like, a serious... Because it sounds like a fucking 12-year-old's
English It's either, assignment. Like, an attempt to subvert your expectations, like, oh, this is, like, a satire movie.
Yeah.
Or it is actual, like, general trash.
Yeah, it's like if there was a film called The Haunted House, which I'm sure there is.
I'm sure there's got to be.
So I didn't run this by before we started rolling, but I've got, like, my sentence pitch here. So, five friends stay at a remote cabin where they are attacked by a zombie family before discovering things are not what they seem.
I'm trying to remember the line. It's not a zombie family. It's a...
A zombie redneck torture family. Yeah.
Two entirely separate species.
Yeah. That was good. So, that's one thing, like, there's going to be a lot of in this episode is there's definitely some one-liners.
Yeah.
And I think that's partly due to Bradley Whitford.
Yeah. And this is, I mean, it's been a while, I think, since we've delved into horror comedy on the pod, right? Last one would have been kind of, well, I guess we mentioned a couple, like, you know, some of the werewolf ones were like horror comedies, but
yeah, it's
like
tough.
The soul movie focus being a horror comedy.
Yeah, I'd say apart from touching on Shaun of the Dead and the zombies episode, like, we've definitely mentioned comedic moments in horror films, but yeah, one that's all out pitching itself as a horror comedy, not so much.
And I think this is a perfect example of one.
Mm.
Like, the horror is horror and the comedy is comedy. And I think it works so well because there's like a hard juxtaposition between like the camper's point of view is horror and then the facility's point of view is comedy.
Yeah.
And so it's like two separate storylines that just like coalesce together.
Yeah, and see, part of me after watching this for the second time was like, I wonder if it would have been cooler as a big reveal at the end, but there's no way an intelligent audience would have been engaged for that long if they didn't have the sort of flashes of the control room with that comedy throughout, because it would have just looked like a shit predictable horror movie.
Yeah.
So I get it.
Yeah, I don't think that would have worked at all.
Yeah, yeah. So I do respect this decision in hindsight, but a bit of background, I guess. It was directed by Drew Goddard, and this was his directorial debut.
And co-written by him as well, right?
Yeah, it was written by him and Joss Whedon, who was the man
Whedon,
behind Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the show. But
among other things.
Well, there's
man brought us like Avengers, right?
There's the shitty movie, but... Drew Goddard also wrote Cloverfield, which I didn't know.
Oh, yeah.
World War Z and The Martian. So, seems like he seems to have a knack for, like, horror sci-fi, I guess you'd call it.
Yeah, I'd agree. And I feel like, is he coming out with something else? Is he doing... No, I might be thinking of something else. Is he doing Project Hail Mary?
I don't know what that is.
This is a roundabout way to go about it. But, like, The Martian was based on a book by, I think...
Andy Weir,
there you go. And I think he did another book called Project Hail Mary.
Right.
And there's a movie coming out. And I thought I heard or read that Drew Goddard's doing that.
Right.
It's got Ryan Gosling in it as well.
Okay. That's cool. I mean, that makes sense. If it's the guy that wrote The Martian, maybe they've trusted his creative vision by now to be able to direct it as well. Very cool. So this film is starring Kristen Connolly, Chris Hemsworth, Anna Hutchison, bless you, Fran Kranz, which is an odd name, and Jesse Williams. And of course, as we mentioned before, Bradley Whitford, who was the father in Get Out and almost unrecognizable to me, to be honest.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, I forgot it was the same guy when I saw him in here. I'm like, oh, that's what he looks like normally. But... is that your foot or is that Monty?
No, that's, that's a cat.
That's Monty gingerly caressing my shin. It was made on a budget of $30 million and grossed $70 million at the box office. Funnily enough, 5,000 of that went to that mug bong contraption. Which is so funny. I think they created that as a prop and then like patented it and sold it.
I mean, yeah, because that's the type of thing where once the idea is there, everyone is like, that's genius.
Yeah.
It's so fantastic.
Yeah, so funny. So, you know, it wasn't a huge success. I mean, it barely broke even.
Yeah,
but
it's also funny because I don't know if you have it in your notes or if we were going to mention it, but like the struggle to actually release the movie where like it was, because it was MGM, right? Was the company behind
the
production company. So they did this and I think even Red Dawn, which also had Chris Hemsworth.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were both made pretty much ready to be put out.
Yeah.
And then MGM like tanked and went under. And so this movie just kind of sat on a shelf for like 2 years.
Mm.
And then it was finally released when another company, I can't remember which one, liked it enough to get the rights and put it out.
Lionsgate.
There you go, Lionsgate.
Yeah, when you mentioned that, that reminded me, as I found in my notes here, but yeah, you're right. So Cabin in the Woods was shelved due to MGM's bankruptcy. And the weird thing about that is Hemsworth got his like big kickstart in Thor, obviously.
Yeah.
But Cabin in the Woods was shot first and came out after Thor. So he's gone from like this, you know, god that people are looking up to just this like typical athletic jock in this cheap horror film, which is so weird. But it's kind of found like a cult classic status, I guess, in our generation. Like, I know heaps of people that love this movie that are around our age. So I guess it was just, you know,
I'm one of them.
Yeah, just a generational thing. But what I like is, you said before, it's like a satire of horror films. And they kind of take all these classic, dare I say, overused tropes of the genre and kind of like explicitly state them. Like, they even say at the end, you know, you've got like those five stereotypes. Like, it's, what is it? The athlete, the whore, the scholar, the fool,
and the jock,
and the virgin. Yeah, so like they're straight up saying these are like the five people that you see in every ensemble cast of any horror movie. But I also like that there's homages to classic horror films throughout. Like, I made a list of them later that we can touch on, but I thought it was really cool way to kind of say these are like what we don't like about horror, but here's some examples of it done well.
Yeah, I also love it. Like, I love the fact that they do just outwardly state these are the cliches, but we're still going to use them. We're still going to use them effectively.
Yeah, see, I don't know how I feel about those classic stereotypes in horrors, because when you're following that formula in a narrative, you kind of know who's going to live and who's not. Because, like, it doesn't really change from horror movie to horror movie. Sure. But I guess it did still work in this because of, like, everything else that was going on. And they do have, like, the textbook cliches, like the dumb blonde. You've got the stoner, who I guess is the fool that's kind of going on about all these, like, government conspiracy theories. You get, like, one horny couple who's always wanting to have sex, and then you've got the other couple that's, there's this, like, sexual tension between them. So it's all those, like, classic things. My particular, my favorite, I think, is when Chris Hemsworth's character is like, we should split up. The other guy's like, that's a great idea.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. The thing I love about this movie so much, though, is that, like, yeah, it has those, quote-unquote, like, stereotypes, but it explicitly states that it's forcing them to do that. It's not trying to say, yeah, these characters are that. In the beginning of the movie, it goes out of its way to show that these aren't those stereotypes.
Yeah.
Like, you get Chris Hemsworth character at the beginning, like, showing...
What's his fucking name? It's a jock name,
right?
Kurt, is it?
Kurt? Yeah, Kurt? There you go.
Yeah, it sounds right.
At the beginning, he's, like, giving her recommendations on, like, you know, textbooks. I think they say he's, like, a sociology major or something. Like, he's not a jock.
Yeah.
I don't know the character, any of the character names, but the main girl's character.
Oh, yeah.
She's... Dana, there you go.
Dana, yeah.
Like, she's not a virgin. They even say that. And, like, she's just had an affair with a teacher, you know? Like,
yeah, yeah.
They're not these stereotypes, but, like, the facility or whatever is forcing them to become it to, like, fit their narrative.
Yeah,
so it's saying,
yeah,
these are the stereotypes. They don't fit it, but we're going to make them fit it for the sake of the ritual.
Yeah, I agree. And I really like the original spin on it. So I guess for those who haven't seen it, you probably don't want to keep listening, because there's going to be some big spoilers in this episode. But it's, so you've got like the twist that I guess is that everything is orchestrated. So the group of friends that go to this cabin, it's all part of this facility you've mentioned's plan to essentially control what happens or influence what happens to fit a stereotypical horror plot. But the real reason behind that, it's kind of like a double bluff, is that there's these like ancient gods living beneath the earth who they need to satiate with innocent blood. And they do that by this almost Hunger Games-esque control room and just set up these people to die in horrific ways to the point where they bet on it and have fun.
Yeah.
Because it's their job.
I mean, that's just another aspect of it I love, that it's this horrible scenario going on, but these guys, it paints them, this is just their job. They're going about their business.
Yep.
They're just treating it as an office job because yeah. that's all it is to them.
And like speaking of that, I love that it opens with just office banter, like they're on a coffee break
yeah.
in like their little cart and they're just like talking about regular things you would talk about.
Yeah, it's, I did read that like Drew Goddard and Joss Whedon like specifically wrote and shot it that way to confuse the audience into like thinking, did we go into the right movie?
Ooh, nice. I like that. And I also like the humor throughout. I mentioned before how I wondered if it would have been better if they saved that for the final act, but then it would have made the first two-thirds enduring. But there's some really great moments, and it's not like cheap humor. Like, I really love that speakerphone gag, where like the ominous dude from the fuel station calls.
Yep.
That's good. The men that like crowd around to watch the sex scene. that was good. But I also particularly enjoy when, not Bradley Whitford, what's the other guy's name? The other actor who plays like the controller.
I got nothing.
Let me go back to my notes. Steve, is it? Okay, well, the character Steve. Thank you, Alex. When he's like cursing the Japanese school children yeah. after they defeat the girl.
That's probably my favorite bit of humor.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, all these Japanese schoolgirls have saved themselves. Fuck you.
I like that because it's not the character like making a joke. It's just you're laughing at the situation because yeah. it's so just preposterous. That was great. And it's interesting because you get like in that first scene where they're kind of on a coffee break, in the dialogue where they mention, oh, we haven't had a glitch since 98.
Mm-hmm.
So that tells us two things. One is everything is like, everything has a plan and it's all, you know, being deliberately done from a control room, but also it's been going on for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's enough intrigue in the first act. It already seems so out of place being set in an office.
Plus the last, you know, the movie that came out in
1998? I want to say Ring.
Halloween H2O, which is where...
as well as Ring, actually.
Which is where she killed Michael Myers, right?
Before they retconned it.
Yeah. So, yeah. But like, if you look at it from that movie point of view, she like that ritual would have failed because she killed the killer.
Yeah. Okay. I like that.
Mm.
I didn't think of that.
I don't give me credit for that. I've read that online.
Okay. I was going to say, if they like sort of touched on that in the film, I missed it, but props.
No,
props.
Absolutely not. They didn't touch that on the film.
Okay. Yeah, we mentioned like the rigged... rigged betting pool, which is kind of funny. It's like the stock market. They're just taking bets as to like who's gonna die, how they're gonna die, and yep. then you get that fucking zombie thing. I like that whiteboard though. It's like all these possible monsters they can throw at them.
Yeah, that's such a good inclusion because it's like, and at that point you don't know what it's gonna be. So it's like it gives you a chance to imagine what the rest of the movie's gonna be like. Like
yeah.
you spot a glimpse of a werewolf. It's like, is it gonna be a werewolf?
Mm.
You spot a glimpse of killer clowns. You spot a glimpse of Kevin. What's Kevin? You know, who knows?
That was great. I saw that. It's weird though. That just reminds me of the peacock from our high school, who I think got his name from that bird in fucking Up.
Okay,
so yep. I just picture that bird from Up coming out and attacking people.
God, I'd see a movie about that.
You
know, they need a horror movie about a cassowary. I think we've touched.
I've
on
said
that before.
That. Yeah, yeah, how freaky would that be? Stop doing.
We'll
about,
call him Kevin.
We don't need fucking boars in the outback. We need cassowaries in the tropical rainforest. Hell yeah. But I also like, there's a kind of a weird contrast that I believe was deliberately done for this kind of subtle commentary where Bradley Whitford's character, one of those controllers, is almost a moment where he's kind of like giving a eulogy to Dana when he thinks she's done for on the dock.
Mm-hmm.
And he's kind of like lamenting how she went through this pain. She was a survivor and she's just going to end like that. But then he just like... pops a champagne bottle or something, like people walk in with tequila
stuff.
Yeah,
like halfway through his like heartfelt thing, he's like, tequila, my lady.
Yeah, and I kind of saw that as commentary for how us as horror fans, we kind of watch this horrible shit of people getting like brutally murdered in horrific ways, but we celebrate it and yeah. we kind of have fun doing that.
I mean, at the end of the day, that's what we're there for, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's why you go to a horror movie, to see the fucked up shit.
That's right. I thought that was kind of cool. But I guess the first instance of noticing things are not what they seem is when there's that eagle or that kite or whatever that like flies into that invisible force field.
If you want to call that the first instance, sure. I mean, there's a dude on their roof with like a head, like an earpiece.
Oh,
like,
yeah, true, actually.
They've left.
Yeah. See, that could have been just like they were being tracked or something.
Okay. But yeah, something that something is that explicitly is like, what the fuck? Yeah.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
I've also read that that's where a lot of people sort of fell off and they're like, well, what is this? Why is there a force field? And that was their like exit point for not liking the movie.
Okay.
which I, you know, I'm fine with it. What are they talking about?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't particularly enjoy it that soon in the film, but it had to be there for Kurt's death setup.
Yeah. Which I think is perfect because it sets up so early in the movie that by the time Kurt's death does come around, you forget about it.
You forget,
And like you might remember as he jumps off, it's like, wait a minute. No, it's fertile? Futile. Those are very different words.
I wondered that, now you saying that, because, yeah, like he tries to make the jump with the motorbike and hits this wall and plummets fucking 100 meters to his death in this chasm. But I remember... Yeah, seeing the bird hit the thing the second time I watched this film. And I was like, oh, do they really show that so early? But you're absolutely right. It's soon enough that you forget by the time Kurt jumps off. And then, like, I didn't even... Like, I watched him hit that. I'm like, oh, yeah. Why did I think of that? Like, it was kind of smart.
It's like... It's good in two ways because it's either it gives the audience like, oh, yeah, how could I forget? That's smart. They set that up.
Mm.
Or if you did remember the whole time... Then it just like, oh, it gives you the sense of dread of like, oh shit, is he really going to go through with it? You know he's going to die.
Mm.
Is something going to like stop him at the last minute?
Yeah. And because the characters don't see that bird hit that force field, so they don't know it exists till Kurt hits it on his bike, then they don't know that they're kind of trapped in there and they don't know that like mountain tunnel is their only in and out.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you saw that when you go into a cabin in the woods, you'd be very confused.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I'd want to stay somewhere where the only way in and out is a fucking tunnel that's cut into a rock face
I think I'd want to retire at somewhere like that.
Yeah, okay. That'd be nice.
Sounds great.
And I really like when you see the CCTV control room and there's cameras everywhere, but I think Marty, who's the stoner or the fool, he finds the cable somehow. He's like really close to a lamp or something, isn't he? And then he like...
He knocks the lamp over later.
Yeah.
So it's later when they're actually getting attacked. He flinches, hits over the lamp and finds it and starts pulling it down.
Yeah. So before that, there's no real suspicion that things are not what they seem from the others because there's like mist, right? Like the fog that they release, it has chemicals in it, like pheromones. And then...
There's all sorts. Like there's... like they've put substance in...
Is it in the whiskey?
The whore's blonde hair dye to make her dumber. I can't remember what they did for Kurt. I don't know if they spiked the beer or something to make him dumber. I don't know what else
they did. That would make sense.
They say they fucked up Marty's stash, but then apparently they missed one of his stashes.
Because he has so many.
And then somehow that like immunized him to the rest of it.
Yeah, I like that. That's what I enjoyed most is like him being high... made him like see clearer than everyone else. And he's the one that first like catches on.
I think that's just called being high.
Yeah. Something I wanted to ask you is what was the purpose of that one-way mirror behind the painting in one of the like lodges in one of the rooms?
What was the purpose of it?
Yeah. Like I know the purpose would have been for someone to stay in that room to like spy on the neighbor, but in the film, like, what was the purpose?
What was the purpose of the audience? I mean, just, I guess, for a sense of unsettlingness.
Okay. Because I wondered...
That's all I could think of.
I wondered if maybe that was one of the things that the controllers put into the design of the cabin to test their morality. So it's like, all right, if we put the two people that kind of have feelings for each other but don't admit it next to each other, is one of them going to, like, watch the other one change?
I mean, sure.
But I still don't really see
that's
point.
That's one
of it,
level deeper than I thought. I don't think they would do that.
Yeah.
But I'd like the inclusion in the movie because it does like then point. I think his name is Malcolm. Points Malcolm's character as like a an actual moral guy, and he's not just there
Holden,
to get in her pants.
I think
Holden. There you go, not Malcolm. Oh yeah, I'm good with names.
Yeah. Also, when they play Truth or Dare, which always ends badly in a horror film. Jules, I think. Is that the one that dyes her hair blonde?
Yep.
So she's dared to make out with the wolf.
She's dared to make out with the moose. That's a good bit of humor.
That's right. Yeah. That's fucking funny. So there's this wolf head mounted on the wall and she's just like going for it. And I wonder what the point of that, like showing it for so long, so close was, apart from just making viewers potentially uncomfortable. But then I remembered, like, the fuel station dude, the ominous guy that calls the controllers, he refers to them as lambs, and I wondered if it was an analogy for them, like, quite literally flirting with death by just, like, walking into these traps.
Maybe.
I don't know. I really wanted to look into these things.
I'm sure there's something there with lambs and wolf.
Yeah. Because it didn't make sense to me otherwise why it was there.
Yeah. I don't know. Well, it's just... In my mind, it's just more of the, like... they're forced to make this ritual, like the facility to make this ritual, and so they have to make it as realistic as possible, and so they have to make the whore hoary.
Yeah, okay, I get it.
I don't know,
because then they could have just had like a makeout scene, like a regular one with a person, or I don't know. She cheats.
I don't know, because it's got to lean into the, like, it's a, you know, it's mimicking a slasher or a horror movie, and so you got to have those moments in it.
Yeah, yeah, I think I understand. And then you get your zombie redneck torture family. So funny. And it's so Evil Dead. Like, they're summoned by a Latin passage read from a diary they find in the cellar where the trap door just mysteriously pops open.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's, yeah, obviously straight rip. And if I'm, like, not mistaken, I would say that The Evil Dead's probably the first popular horror film with, like, a remote cabin in the woods.
Cabin in the woods.
I mean, unless Hills Have Eyes, but...
I'm not sure. Well, I think the RV is meant to be a reference to The Hills Have Eyes.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not well-versed enough in every horror movie to say a cabin in the woods.
I would dare say it's the earliest popular one.
Surely, yeah.
And that's probably why they just leaned into like the Latin passage with the diary and everything.
Mm-hmm. It's just they just happened to choose that one for the point of the story.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah,
they could have made a different one where they chose the... I read what his name was... Fornicus, the leather bound something.
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, the Hellraiser ripoff with like saws was another one of their options. Like they could have made a whole movie with that instead or with the floating ghost people.
Yeah.
They just decided to go with Evil Dead.
Yeah. And the first person killed is Jules, who is the one making out with the wolf.
Mm-hmm.
And she's... that's one thing is like not a lot of the deaths are shown in this film, but... what I do like is you get the double bluff where they kind of cut away, pun intended, just as she's about to have like a cross-cut saw go through her neck.
Mm-hmm.
But then like the zombie just rocks up at the door and tosses Dana the severed head. And she's just like holding it for a second before she realizes.
Good looking severed head too.
Yeah, yeah.
Very, very realistic.
I did enjoy the balance of, like CGI and practical effects. Mm-hmm. It was when the scope was too large with the budget they had, they went... digital, but it looked like as much as they could was practical.
Yeah, it's almost like they did everything they could practical, and then they only delved into CGI when they needed to.
Mm, mm.
Which I think
is forgivable.
Pretty sure Heather Langenkamp and her husband did some special effects in this.
Oh, cool. That's right, because they met on the set of Nightmare on Elm Street, didn't they?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah,
and
that's
cool. They have their own like company.
Yeah, wow.
Special effects.
That's cool. And I think the next death is Holden, right? The scholar? Because he's...
No, the next death would be Kurt.
Oh, yeah, that's
like,
right.
Because you think the next death is Marty.
Yes, that's right. And I do like that is it kind of a trope, I guess, where, you know, there's always one victim who ends up coming back and they're not actually killed and they save the day just at the right time. Next death. Dana, not Dana. Jules. I can't remember. See, that's the thing. All these characters' names, like, you don't fucking remember them because who remembers a character's name in a slasher? Let's be real. Yeah. It's always the masked villain you remember and that's it.
Yeah.
But, so after Jules is dead, Marty the stoner, you suspect is dead. He ends up coming back to save the day. And then what I do like is Kurt jumps over the edge on his bike, hits the force field, falls to his death in the chasm. And then Holden and Dana in the RV. And he's like, what does he say? Like, we've just got to remain calm. Then instantly stabbed through the neck while he's driving.
Yeah,
that was
it definitely perfect. Comes out of nowhere.
Yeah,
because like you're really not expecting another death so soon after Kurt, right?
Mm.
Like, oh yeah, he's just died. Now they've got to escape.
Yeah,
and it's a sort of another sense of like another reveal that they did earlier. Because when they first get in the RV, you saw like the bloody handprint on it, and I guess enough time maybe has elapsed that you might have forgotten about that.
Yeah,
and then the fucking thing through the neck.
Yeah, yeah. When the tunnel explodes, is that like they're heading for that in the RV and then it explodes? Because back in the control room, it was like already meant to have exploded, but there was like a wiring issue?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, because I was just trying to remember.
Because Marty, because I think they say there was like an a reroute from upstairs.
Oh,
okay. So it's
kind
of like an early hint that Marty is up there like screwing around.
Yeah, yeah. And Marty, so we mentioned before how he finds that they're being watched because he finds a hidden camera and then he finds this cable that I think that's it, like leads him to the hidden elevator.
No.
How does he find the elevator?
That's where he gets like dragged to and you think he dies.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Because that's where they came out of.
Okay. my memory must not be serving me well. Mm. But I do like when he comes back to save Dana when she's like fighting for her life on the jetty.
For like a long time.
Oh yeah, it's like in the background of the control room.
I love that. I love that they're having like this celebration that they've done their job. And in the background you can see on the screen, she's just getting fucked up by this fucking Michael Shit Myers looking motherfucker.
Yeah, that was good. And then he finds the elevator and they go down and... it goes into, it like stops, and then all the walls are like windows, right? And they're enclosures, and you see like what a werewolf comes at him. Pretty good looking werewolf as well, right? For CGI. There's like that mysterious little girl, and then turns around, her face is like just rows and rows of teeth.
Yep.
And then you get that dude you were talking about, like fucking, what is it? Fornicus, Lord of Bondage or some
shit.
Yeah,
something like that.
That's cool, man. He's got like...
He looks better than the actual Hellraiser.
Yeah, like jigsaws, like half embedded in his skull. So cool. And the fact that he doesn't say anything, again, always scarier.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've made their way to the control room and they're like hiding... in between these corridors in this facility because this like SWAT team is after them, and they find this like desk where they engage this button that opens all the cells, essentially. They're like holding cells for different creatures that they want to release. And I guess they just send them up to this remote cabin in this elevator whenever they decide to do it.
Yep.
And they unleash all sorts of things on these personnel.
Yeah.
And
this is where the movie just takes like another turn.
Just
like,
an absolute bloodbath.
Yeah, like it's interesting how many turns this movie takes. Like it sets it up in the beginning. It's, you know, it's interesting. It's not slow, but it's kind of, it's progressing at its own pace.
Mm.
And then it certainly takes a twist when the actual like chaos starts happening and they start getting murdered by the Buckner family.
Yeah.
And then when they hit this button, it just jumps to 11 and now it's an entire facility going meltdown. Everyone's fucking dying.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a little bit too much CGI for my liking, but I do like it had to be. Like, there's that much happening in a small space that would have been so difficult to do practically. Like, I get it.
I'm 100% okay with it just because it's like it's such a big scope. It's like such a big idea that they had to do CGI to make it work, and I'm happy with it.
I don't know how that would have looked on paper. Like, the characters are looking out the window, the elevators open up and you've got like 20 different inconceivable beings lunging at these people. And like, it's like a long shot.
Just imagine like just coming up with that in the writer's room. Just like, all right, so we start. Okay, now what's first? Okay, well, the werewolf comes out. Sure. How about a flying bat thing? What about a fucking unicorn? Put a unicorn
in there. The unicorn? That was
great. Murder robot.
Oh, man. The merman? That was brilliant because like Bradley Whitford just wants a damn merman for once.
That's such a good... I think... That was rated in like test audiences' most like satisfying moment.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is completely fair.
Yeah, yeah. It's such an ironic, poetic death.
It's like occasionally built up to towards a couple of times in the movie, and then it finally pays off and is also a bit of like comeuppance to him.
Yeah, yeah. It's quite grotesque.
Yeah.
Like as far as mer people go, it's the most horrible one I've seen.
I read that I think the entire scene went for like 1 to 10 minutes, and they only used like the last 10 seconds of it.
Oh, okay, wow. So they would have been a hella drawn out death.
Yeah,
wild. Because it's got like a blowhole on its back, and blood and shit just spurts out. It's very fucking messy. Gnarly. Yeah. What was your favorite monster in that whole like scene?
I mean, it's probably the merman. I think I think a lot of people's is probably the merman.
Mm.
Or, oddly enough, the killer robot.
Was that the one that had like a scorpion tail?
Yeah, like a scorpion tail with like a buzzsaw on it.
That was one of my favorites too. Yeah.
And I like how they blend like movie monsters that you'd know of and sort of, you know, twist them enough to avoid copyright.
Yeah.
But then just throw in like, a murder robot that they've made up.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And then like the director appears who, from memory earlier in the film, the two main controllers like refer to them as he. It's like they prefer to be like referred to as a man, and then it turns out to be Sigourney Weaver. Is that
I can't recall because I don't know if they specifically refer to the director. I know they refer to like downstairs a lot.
Yeah, true.
But I think in those instances they're referring to like the gods.
Yeah, okay.
Which, of course, the gods are just an allegory for the audience.
Yeah.
But also because I mean, not because, but just a coincidence, but I think originally they wanted Bruce Campbell to be the director. Bit of another Evil Dead tie-in, I'm guessing.
That's funny.
And I can't remember why he didn't do it, whether it's his choice, the studio's choice, whatever, but their second choice was Sigourney Weaver.
I also can't see him as an evil person, but I can totally see Sigourney Weaver as a bad bitch.
See him as an asshole, like as a dick.
Okay.
Like, yeah, because he's got that like attitude, but yeah.
I could see him playing like a lawyer or something in a movie.
Yeah, I could see that.
But maybe not.
The director's not an evil person. They're doing what they need to, you know.
Yeah.
Stop humanity being destroyed.
A little bit callous.
They're a necessary evil.
Yeah, okay. I'll take your word for that.
Also, did Drew Goddard... No, sorry. Joss Whedon. Whedon? Did Joss Whedon do Alien Resurrection?
Oh, man.
I think he did.
I can't remember.
That's probably how he got Sigourney Weaver.
I'll take your word for it. Because I think I read that they were considering Jamie Lee Curtis. And they wanted one of the two purely because they're some of the oldest, like, scream queens.
Like, horror icons, yeah.
Yeah, because I guess, like, what, you had Ripley as the final girl in Alien in 79, but Halloween was 78, which probably would have been the first proper final girl. Hmm. So, I guess that makes sense. But Sigourney Weaver is great as, like, those type of roles, because she had a similar role in Paul, right? So, I could kind of see that. And that's when she kind of just... You know, straight out tells him, yeah, no, look, there's these ancient deities that live under Earth that we've got to satiate with just blood. Just
dropping that bomb on them.
Yeah. And then I like that they say because they survive, because what, Marty and Dana end up killing her. And then, oh, yeah, because the ghost girl comes out, right? It's like the ring looking chick or something.
It's one of the Buckners.
Oh, is it one of the, gotcha, yeah. The zombie girl, zombie redneck torture family girl. And then she gets like, yeeted over the side like fucking Star Wars and forced to her death. And then you get like that final scare trope, but it's like...
I wouldn't call it a final scare. I'd just call it it's a final shot for sure.
Yeah, but like, I don't know if I liked it or not. I'm not sure.
I'm fine with it.
This giant hand, like godly, stony, fiery hand, reaches out of the ground, crushes the cabin and the credits roll.
Yeah. I mean, I think there could also be a version of this movie maybe where... It's like more open and unknown if there is actually ancient gods. And so like maybe they could lean into that's their belief system. And so that's what they're doing.
Yeah.
But maybe what they're doing is wrong and they don't actually know for sure.
Yeah, I like that. Also, you know how you just said before, it's like a metaphor for an audience, right? Horror fans.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, very accurate. Like if we're watching a shitty slasher and the characters don't die, we're like, boo, we want more deaths. Yeah. So I can see that parallel. But what if they twisted it even further and it was like, that happens, that whole end scene with the director drops the bomb that we've got to like make these gods happy or else they'll kill us all. And then she dies. But then it's revealed like everything's a set and there's like a cinema audience applauding at the end before the credits roll.
I think if I'd have watched a movie and that is the ending, I would want my money back. That sounds awful. That sounds absolutely terrible.
It's too literal, right? Like everything was a set and people were actually being killed in front of them.
That's something from a Mel Brooks movie. And it belongs in a Mel Brooks movie. It does not belong in this movie.
It's like something you'd see in like one of the Purge sequels or something like that. People watching.
So you're saying this whole thing was just a set on a movie?
Well, it could have been.
Awful. Terrible. That's a bad idea.
It could have been like a modern analogy for like the Colosseum where people paid to watch people die and kill each other.
Oh, okay. So you're saying all the stuff still happened.
So now it's valid.
So you're saying all the stuff still happened.
Oh, yeah. Like people actually died and like creatures killed them.
But instead of like ancient gods, it's an actual audience, like hostile, like the elite people.
And they refer to like horror fans or general
public.
I'm
more on board. I like my idea better.
I do too. I just think that would be interesting.
But I do like that now that you've... clarified it.
That'd be cool.
I thought you literally meant like curtains draw and it's just they're making a movie or something.
Oh, no, that would have been dreadful. Wake up and it's all a dream kind of deal.
Yeah.
What a cop out.
Anyway.
No, like people legit die, but it's in front of an audience. Maybe I'll patent that. Zombies on Mars, but it's all a movie set. We get bored on the red planet with nothing to do. But I mentioned before how there's like a lot of homages to other classic horror films. I'm sure you picked up a few. Some I've listed here. We've got the fuel station in the first act where they find that sort of rude,
Harbinger.
Menacing guy that's always there. Yeah, Harbinger of Doom. That reminded me a lot of Texas Chainsaw, purely because you see the skins hanging in there, yep. but also the brooms. You remember like when he's poking the chick in the sack with the broom?
Yep.
I was like, oh, that's so subtle, but I like that. And I thought that was cool. Very slightly, but the Winding Mountain Road and those twin girls in the holding cell in the final act.
The probably, Shining.
Yeah, nod to that.
Okay.
Pretty much everything from The Evil Dead. very subtle again, but the lake with the surrounding trees, possibly Friday 13th, although there was no canoe.
Yeah.
So that's hard to tell. There is it part two or part three though, when there's a chick hiding under the jetty? Oh no, it's the reboot, the like 2008 reboot, and she's hiding in the water under the jetty, oh, and it just like
sword
stabs
goes down
it
and
through.
Like pulls her up.
Yeah.
I think that's the remake.
Yeah, that was kind of cool. I digress.
Sounds way too graphic for the original.
Yeah, exactly. You had like the ballerina music box in the cellar. I wondered if that was a nod to
Black.
Suspiria.
Oh, okay.
Oh, or Black Swan.
Black Swan, maybe.
Could be
know.
Black Swan. There's a legit music box in that too. And then you've got like that puzzle ball that the Cenobite dude has, which is obviously Hellraiser, and the Japanese ghost girl, which would have been like, you know, Ring, The Grudge.
I mean, there were so many though. Like there's like the mask people, I'm guessing, were meant to be the strangers. There was a Pennywise like clown.
Literal. Where was there? Oh, in the like final act when it's killing people.
Final act,
true. Yep. Can't believe I missed that one. Yeah.
There was so many. There's way too many to even list.
Is this the first horror film with a killer unicorn?
I doubt it.
It's the first one I've seen.
I doubt it. Can't be.
It'd be a pretty dreadful film. Let's be real. If that was the only antagonist. But
if you were in this situation,
yeah,
which one would like? If you knew you had to survive it, which one would you pick?
Oh, let me see.
I've got mine if you
honestly, the fucking unicorn. It's a horse.
Oh, okay.
Just shut the door.
I mean, I think it's a magical horse. It can grant wishes.
What, it's a genie horse?
But isn't that a thing? Unicorns can grant wishes?
I thought it was just a fucking horse. Oh, I'm thinking of Pegasus where they fly.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, they grant wishes. They don't speak. I mean, okay, maybe how does that work?
I don't know.
I'll take your word for it. Yeah, because look. If they're zombies, you can't really kill them unless you know behead them and burn them or whatever you got to do.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else was too fast or powerful, so I'm going with the damn unicorn.
Okay, what about you? I'm going with the merman.
Ooh, taking
like,
chances.
Like, stay out of the lake and you're fine.
Yeah,
you see
okay.
how slow he was on land?
Just doing the worm towards the cabin.
That's easy.
Yeah, fair. All right. Pretty grotesque though. If you get caught by it, at least with the unicorn, it's just getting impaled.
Yeah.
Unless they chew you to death, I don't know. In terms of technique, not a whole lot with this kind of film, but there were a couple things I did like. One was that beer bottle match cut when the chick's in the lake, just about she has a breach, she pulls the bottle out of the bucket. That was nice.
Yep.
I doubt it, but was there a shot in here you would frame?
Well, you doubt it. I'd have two.
Ooh, okay. What have we got?
Two very different shots. One is like the more, like the very classic horror movie one where it's just the first shot of the cabin in the woods.
Dude, that looks so much like Evil Dead.
Exactly.
So I wondered if it was
could
like...
just be an Evil Dead, you know,
photo.
The other one would be like when there it's like zooms out and shows all of the elevator like cubes.
Okay, yeah. Just, and they're like shuffling around.
Yeah, yeah. I think that'd just be a good one to have on the wall.
Mm.
Like if you can have a moving photo and they're all just shuffling around, like all different new ones coming in. That'd
maybe
be cool.
Like a lenticular card and you tilt it from side to side to see it move.
Yes.
That'd be cool. It could be like invite people over. Hey, how many horror films can you see in this picture? I like that. And yeah, so I guess in general, like, this is probably quite a short episode, to be honest, because I don't really have too much I can talk about in terms of meaning of it, because they kind of break it down themselves in this film. Like, they take the tropes, they spin it. I do love the original spin of having everything being controlled and also, like, thrown in that comedy side of it, because I can't really see this as a serious film, because it would have taken... Like, I wouldn't have been able to suspend my disbelief long enough to believe, like, these werewolves and... zombie families and killer robots and killer clowns were like all in there actually happening. So the fact that they're like, well, actually, I don't know. I've just dug myself in a hole. Are they fabricated creatures? Are they real? Has this place made them?
The director says they're remnants of the old world.
Yeah, right. Okay. Yeah. So I guess what I'm saying is I've said this numerous times on the pod before, but a film where you've got to suspend your disbelief, the easiest way to do that is throw some comedy in there. Because then it makes it fun.
Sure.
And you're not trying like to take something seriously that's so obviously not.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so like the old world, these ancient gods. So it's like all of these monsters once like were regular inhabitants of Earth. Is that what they're going for?
I think that's the lore, yeah. Like,
yeah, okay.
In the before times, you know, there were all these monsters roaming around. The giant gods were fucking around everywhere. And then at some point, they did a ritual, like humans did a ritual to sacrifice people, and that suppressed them.
Mm.
And then, I don't know, that's when humanity flourished.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know.
I was going to say, there's no way that we would have outlived all those things.
I don't think you're meant to think about that part of the movie too much.
Oh, yeah. It's switch your brain off and watch some cool stuff happening and have a bit of a laugh.
Yeah.
I will say it's a very clever idea, but I did find the bulk of the film uninteresting.
Wow.
And I think that's because they deliberately play it out as a typical slasher. So okay. Everything's predictable, but the fact that they, you know, play on it and they draw attention to the fact like, oh, what do you mean splitting up is a good idea? You know, like stuff like that. I get it in hindsight. But like the enjoyable part of the film for me is the controllers.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was sort of about to say is, anytime I would maybe start to feel like that, like sort of get a little bit disinterested in the cabin side of it, they'd like swoop in showing the facility side of it. And then my attention would divert there.
Yeah, okay.
And so it's like it's two halves of the movie that just come together to make the whole thing really good.
Yeah, you can't have one without the other. This is true.
I have a much higher opinion of this movie than you.
Which is fine.
Like, I put it up there and it's almost blasphemy, like, with Scream in terms of, like horror, like, satires.
Yeah,
like, Scream does it in a more subtle way of... It calls attention to it, but it doesn't outright say this is what's happening. But it still calls attention to it and uses the same tropes.
Yep.
Whereas this takes the way more direct approach and says this is what's happening and we're going to do it.
Yeah, okay.
Because it's what needs to happen.
Yeah, I can see how it's quite revolutionary in that regard, and I can't say I've seen it done since.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess it's one of those ideas where, like, the idea is there. You can't make another movie with the same idea.
Yeah, okay. Like, no,
you can just do spin-offs with the different, like country, like, simulations they do.
Mm.
But I suppose they'd all have to end in... Well, they wouldn't all have to end in success because other ones have failed.
Yeah. So, in the Deadheads Facebook group, the question was, what's your least favorite horror movie cliche? Now, this was your idea because I had no idea what to post for this film. And now we've got a couple. So Dave said, a sex scene confirming without a shadow of a doubt that someone is getting slaughtered soon.
Yeah, sure. Sometimes during sex.
Yeah, well, that's true. Yep. And Sean said, when people investigate a noise coming from the other room, that noise is obviously something or someone trying to kill you. Just get out of there.
Yeah.
Which, that's why I hate it when people lock the front door and run upstairs when they, like, realize someone's in the house with them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Unless you're the chick from Texas Chainsaw and you just leap through windows every 5 minutes. Like, it's not a good time. What about you? What's your least favorite horror movie cliche?
Off the top of my head, because I forgot to think about this, I can't think of anything. I might agree with Sean.
Mm.
Like, just the investigating the stupid noises.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you know something's wrong, don't go that way.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That might be it. What about you? Maybe I can come up with something better.
I mean, I kind of like how they use that in, I think it's Nope. And when he sees, like, the little the little aliens, like, at his ranch, he's just like, nope, pulls the phone out, gets out of it. It's like, yes, that's what every regular person would do.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know, least favorite cliche. This is going to be ironic coming from me, but I hate when they keep throwing the weapon down. Keep throwing it away. Like, it happens all the time in Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Jamie Lee Curtis has the knife, throws it down, like, 3 times in the final act, and the shape just keeps coming back. So,
that's where I like in this movie, they had a very small moment where she has the knife, and then, like, one of the guys flips a switch and then there's a little shock which makes her drop the knife.
Like that, I missed that.
That's that little moment there to explain that in all the other movies.
That's funny. I missed that. That's cool. Yeah, that or even just like no double tap, you know, like make sure they're dead. But I guess if you put it into perspective, like if you want to be somewhat realistic about it, if you've gone through some traumatic experience where somebody's tried to kill you, they've chased you all around this place and you've had to like brutally murder them like to defend yourself, that's not something you're going to want to, like, keep doing. You want to get it done so they're, you know, debilitated and then leave it alone. So, I get it. But just watching it as a third party comfortably from my couch on TV gives me the shits.
Sure.
But yeah, that is pretty much all I have to say about The Cabin in the Woods of 2011. What about you?
No, that's all I have. And I'm glad because my voice is starting to get very painful now.
Oh, I'm glad it's a short episode then.
Yeah. So thank you all for listening to my very gravelly and sometimes out voice.
Mm.
You can catch us every Monday when we drop a new episode from any streaming service. In the meantime, catch us on Deadheads on Facebook or Deadhouse or Deadhouse Pod or deadhousepod@hotmail.com if you're on email. We'll be right back.
Very good. You made it.